¿Dónde estás? Yo sí mando estado. Yo sí mando estado.
I wanted to say this meeting open. DM that as we are going to be doing this presentation, we really had to push because we are rushing this thing to go through. So, we are rushing that we finish this building the 10. There are quite a number of things. So that is why we chose this day. You know for a fact that we thought that we'll do it on the last Monday. But then there was a change of program. So thanks for that. You see, that is a program that we sent you, that we drafted that it must take a 6-week cycle. Now, in the program that we sent you, it doesn't show as a six-week cycle. So we've taken one item out of the program. I think it's on the 29th of May. We've taken that where we're going to have a strategic plan, and we'll take that week also and put it in so that we're not left behind. Because if we miss this cycle now, not only tourism and other departments, also training industry, international relationships, mineral resources, we've got bills that are coming. So we are so fortunate that we're starting with this one. So we had to do this one first. Secondly and lastly, since it is a Friday, most of the members, you know, they come from different provinces. Only two provinces, I would say, they are not that affected. That would be Western Cape and maybe Gauteng, well, and KwaZulu-Natal, to a certain extent. But most members are connecting sites. So we don't want to say we want to be short, but we want you to take that into consideration. We don't want to see a situation where the department is left with two or three members. So there's no catch flights. So to be honest, because we are one government, we'd appreciate that at least by 12 we are done, so that we catch our flights. DM, I will give you the opportunity. I think if there are members from other provinces, if they can introduce themselves. Let me say everybody must introduce him or herself. Otherwise, I won't be fair. I'm Dimsani Kamete, chairing the community from KwaZulu-Natal. I start from this army here, you know. I'm a general and I've got my assistant there. Then we introduce ourselves, then we go to the members right through this side and then we come to the
I'm Zweli Van Zimasilela, the content advisor for the committee.
Shopetam Tileri, committee secretary.
Good morning, I'm Abdullah Khani, I'm the committee researcher.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's a bit unfair that I introduced myself before the deputy minister, so I apologize now. I'm Elder Van Lingen from the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, I am Mr. Pabalikhan, I'm from your Popo province.
Mr. Mukwalumaile from the Lampa.
Good morning, my name is Joyce Pekani from Kalti.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Nongose Vana, coming from Eastern Cape Legislature, representing Economic and Developmental Affairs and Tourism. Thank you.
Good morning, Kenneth. Okay, how was the day?
That one is not on.
Morning, Kenneth. Okay, how was the
day? Good morning. Good morning, Kenneth.
This lady here, will you introduce herself?
Good morning, honorable chairperson and honorable ministers, honorable MG and everybody. I'm sorry, I'm late. I went to the wrong door.
morning, I'm Mr. Rasmus from Committee Section.
Good morning, I'm Johan Durant from the Ministry.
Honorable sir, could you introduce yourself?
Good morning, my name is Dave Evans, I'm from Gauteng, thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. My name is Gary Roden, I'm the legal advisor to the committee.
Good morning, my name is Jate Kumakwele, I'm the researcher from Celtic.
Good morning, my name is Dana Mishana, I'm from the Celtic.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Amanda Seleko. I'm from the Eastern Cape Zone, Senior Committee Coordinator.
DM, I'll hand it over to your side to start and then take over in the introduction.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and very good morning to all honorable members and the team of the department. We'll take around to also introduce ourselves and then come back with my presentation. I'm the Deputy Minister of the Department of Tourism. And my name is Togo Kaza.
Morning, Chairperson and honorable members. Dirk von Skalkwyk, I'm from South Africa.
Good morning. My name is Mandlunki Sitwana. I'm the Head of Legal Services for the Department of Tourism.
Good morning, my name is Mimi Gumene. I'm the Chief Quality Assurance Officer for Tourism Wedding Council.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Tulani Zima, the Chief Executive Officer for South African Tourism, Chairman part of the Chief.
Good morning, my name is Victor Tarage. I'm Deputy Director General responsible for Policy and Knowledge Services, as well as the National Tourism Guide Register.
Good morning, I'm Yuveshni Pillai, Director for Tourist Guiding in the Department of Tourism.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Jeremiah Matlala from Department of Tourism.
Good morning. My name is Sengabako Mimala from the Office of the Deputy Minister of Tourism.
Good morning. I'm Pierre Fanica from the Office of the Director General of Tourism.
Jocelyn Moretti, Liaison Officer, Gauteng.
Marie Bassam, Liaison Officer, Free State Legislation.
Good morning. Owen Janssen, Liaison Officer, KwaZulu-Natal.
Morning. Much have the Legal Advisor to the Free State Legislation.
Good morning, I'm Nonsa Sibani from the Eastern Cape Legislature, Researcher for the Portfolio Committee on Economic Development and Environmental Affairs and Tourism.
Morning, I'm Philip Mahova, Limpopo HGOP, Admin Officer.
Matlo Malakha Kudi, Northwest Official, Kaltu.
And
you can
enter Northern Cape, Admin Officer.
Good morning, my name is Paul Sherpin, I'm a Policy Coordinator for the
So, that's it. Thanks very much. Before you continue, DM, I want to say to you, DM, the Ministry, and especially SAT, we did see the Jazz Festival. We hope the one that is coming also next year. If you are still alive, we hope to see it. Thanks very much. Over.
I can't say you say we're coming from a very successful tourism endeavor in the last week. And it proved to be very successful, and thanks to the leadership of our marketing agency, the South African Tourism. Chairperson, we're coming to present here, and we have the apology of the minister and the director general who are part of the state visit to Russia. So that is why I am leading the delegation here tonight, this morning. And Dirk van Skalkwyk, the Chief Operations Officer of the Department, will then lead the presentation Chairperson, today the Department of Tourism will present its tourism bill 2012. The presentation, we hope, will present an overview of various chapters of the bill, their interpretation and application. I will therefore not go into the complex details, but would like to provide the committee with the context within which to understand not only the presentation, but also the prevailing conditions that existed in the wake of the drafting of the bill. Chairperson, legislation in general is important for two essential reasons. It replaces the spontaneous creation and application of non-legislative rules, thereby establishing order in a sector, and number two, that it is a prerequisite for society to develop and set rules that are enforceable and applicable for all, thereby creating an enabling environment for future development and growth. In light of this, it is essential to reflect on the current policy, legislative and strategic framework for the tourism sector. Prior to the drafting of the bill, the sector was governed by the Tourism Act of 1993, which its objective is to promote tourism. And the Act was promulgated more than 15 years ago and was amended three times in the years of 1996, 2000, and 2002, respectively. All of the amendments related to the management of tourist guides. However, the Act fell short of being an overarching national legislative framework for the management of tourism and did not support the implementation of the later 1996 Tourism White Paper and its broader policy framework. It is net and inflexible to respond to the ever-changing landscape of the sector. Then the White Paper on the development and promotion of tourism in South Africa was later drafted in 1996 with a specific purpose to provide a policy framework and guideline for the development of tourism, which the Tourism Act had omitted. The White Paper recognized that tourism is important to the economy, but that there was lack of inclusive, effective national, provincial, and local structures to manage tourism, transformation, and access. Then the White Paper further defined the role of key role players, such as national, provincial, and local governments, as well as the private sector, to which the Constitution of 1996 alluded. Very importantly, too, the White Paper set a tone for later developments around responsible tourism practices. However, gaps became apparent in the White Paper as well. In 2009, government identified tourism as one of the key contributing sectors to the medium-term strategic priority of growing economy and creating decent work. Tourism's capacity to deliver on the aforementioned was strengthened through the establishment of the dedicated National Department of Tourism. Furthermore, the new growth path, which is an operational plan within the National Development Plan, identified tourism as one of the six jobs drivers. So our department, therefore, is guided by the National Tourism Sector Strategy, which was developed in consultation with the stakeholders. Recognizing that transformation is vital to ensure the sustainable growth and development of the sector, and that inadequate, uncoordinated, and fragmented tourism planning and information provision is the most pervasive challenge facing the development and growth of tourism in the country, the department embarked on the drafting of the bill. The bill, when promulgated, will repeal the Tourism Act of 1993. On the bill, the overarching aim is to provide for the development and promotion of sustainable tourism for the social economic and environmental benefit of South African citizens. And with that in mind, the bill boasts five key objectives. First being the promotion of promoting the practice of responsible tourism. Secondly, providing for the effective marketing of South Africa both domestically and internationally. Thirdly, promoting quality tourism products and services. Fourth, promoting the growth and development of the sector. And fifthly, effective intergovernmental relations in developing and managing tourism. The glaring gaps that the tourism bill seeks to address amongst others, one, the National Tourism Sector Strategy, which was approved by Cabinet in 2011, will, when a bill is passed as an act, form part of the legislative framework for the management and development of tourism. The strategy is premised on tourism growth, enhanced visitor experience, sustainability, and good governance. The policy framework that was initially set out in the white paper was also incorporated into the National Tourism Sector Strategy. Secondly, the bill makes provision for the establishment of a convention bureau by South African Tourism to coordinate bids for business events. Necessary steps have already been taken to fund and implement the provisions defined in the bill for the creation of the Conventions Bureau. Thirdly, the bill establishes the Tourism Grading Council as a statutory entity responsible for quality assurance of tourism products, services, and facilities. The Grading Council will implement the grading system. The bill expands its mandate and will allow the minister to determine a grading system and assign the oversight role and functions of the grading council to the department, the board of SAT, or to any other suitable body in compliance with the Public Finance Management Act. Fourthly, the white paper and the sector strategy recognize the lack of knowledge and understanding within the tourism sector. So in the bill, we are therefore providing for knowledge and information management, monitoring, and evaluation. The bill also makes provision for the calling of information from tourism businesses. This is aimed at fostering better understanding of the sector and at improving decision making. So the bill defines this as voluntary and allows for incentives for businesses who participate. And fifthly, the bill also makes provision for the issuing of norms and standards to standardize the management and development of tourism, including the provision of tourism services, facilities, and products. The norms and standards on service excellence and responsible tourism in the bill stem from the white paper and the National Tourism Sector Strategy. The bill further provides for the determination of codes of good practice as guidelines for the management of tourism. And in conclusion, Chairperson, this bill serves as the essence of the effective legislative framework required for the drafting of policies and strategies that will enhance the performance of the tourism sector for decades to come. Our vision for the department is to be a catalyst for tourism growth and development in South Africa. And the introduction of this bill will be added to our tally stick of achievements in fulfilling this vision. I will now then, Chair, hand over to the CEO to take you through the presentation. Thank you.
As you do that, Derek, I'm sure the DM has covered the draft. If you could just zoom into the really technical issues of it. After that, we'll request for the comments from the legal advisor. If there's any comment after the presentation, and especially delicate if there's anything that they want to raise after that presentation. Before I forget, three provinces are ready for presentation next week. Limpopo on the 23rd of May, Gauteng on the 22nd, and then the Free State on the 23rd also. So it goes without saying that Northern Cape, that one is not working.
Yes, I can just confirm that Northern Cape is also ready on the 24th.
Okay. So Northern Cape on the Northern Cape on the 24th. On the state 24th. So Northwest also on the 24th. So five provinces next week. We'll have five or ten officials accompanying these delegates to this province. One is enough to actually explain the technical part of the bill whenever the delegates come there. So five provinces next week, which goes without saying then that the other week and the four will follow. Then we have completed that. After that, provinces will then have public hearings.
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Mr. Van Schalkwyk. Chair, can we just go through that list again, and can we now get the dates for the other provinces too? Because we are together now, and everybody has got a rep here, and we've got to plan our lives. I mean, we're not circuit life.
You'll get it. After Dirk has done the presentation, then would have contacted everybody, then we'll go through the list once more. Mr. Fakazi?
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and based on your request, we just circulate, there's two presentations that we will be dealing with. The one is explaining the process towards the legislation. So I'm not going to go into the detail. I think that the Minister, the Deputy Minister, has given some overviews, but I just want to highlight some issues in relation to that. So I will just skip some of the slides and I will talk through some of the slides. I think the first thing is that we need to recognize that is the emphasis that comes that when we develop the draft bill, we look at the white paper. And the white paper then recognized, that's 1996, the strategic importance to the economy, complete lack of knowledge and understanding of tourism, lack of inclusive, effective national, provincial and local structures, lack of transformation and access, lack of involvement in poor
services.
So as I indicated that I won't go through all the history, but I just highlight some sort of essential points on that one. Then I think what is important that there's a standalone department. So the emphasis on tourism, and what is important is that tourism is one of the six pillars in the go part. So that is where we are getting our mandate from. The vision for us is to be the top 20 destinations in 2010, and that is the vision of the NTSS. So NTSS specific are defined in Chapter 3 of the bill. And when Martin Donkey deals with it, I think we can go in a little bit more detail. So this is the emphasis of where we want to go related to the NTSS. Enable legal framework for the development management of tourism. This bill specifically clarifies roles and responsibilities. So I think that is essential that we note that. Then promote responsible tourism for the benefit of South Africa, and that is to provide for the sector's domestic and international markets for South Africa as a tourism destination. Knowing that we've got provincial entities doing marketing, but ultimately South African tourism mandate will also be to look domestically and internationally, and that's been taken up in that specific chapter. And then to promote growth and development of the tourism sector would be one of the main contributors to the GDP. The national tourism sector set three themes: grow the economy, enhance the visitor experience, and sustainability. And grow the economy is that we as a department contributing mainly to the platform that we develop our government in growing the economy, which also contributed to job creation. Then there's the need for proper knowledge and information management, monitoring and evaluation, which will inform decision making, and then there's norms and standards for service excellence and responsible tourism. The the gaps that address by the bill, I think this is an important part, is the need to develop codes of conduct or good practice as a guideline for management of tourism. And I think one of the troubles, the problems we're having is that the different standards applied throughout the provinces throughout South Africa. We want to get to the point that we take the framework in place. Establish the tourism protection. Now, the present act doesn't have that. We know that the Protection Act specifically deals with that, or the Consumer Act. But we are establishing a mechanism here where we can deal with tourism complaints and make sure that it gets into the right domains, so that we don't leave it, because in a lot of cases, tourists are in the country for 2 or 3 weeks, and we need to manage that process. Reaffirm the mandate of the South African tourism. Then the new bill established a convention to coordinate this. Chairperson, when we presented our flat plan on Wednesday to you, that was one of the issues that has been mentioned. Then Tourism Grazing Council of South Africa will be a statutory entity. So this is a specific chapter for the Tourism Grading Council, where in the old act, the tourism grading was just a byproduct under the SAT functions. And we've established a chapter to deal with it and what would be the objectives and purposes. And the mandate is being expanded in the new legislation. The process to review the Tourism Act, and I'm not going to go through that in detail, just to say that this act or the draft will have been properly consulted with MINPEC, with MINMEC, local municipalities, private sector, mainly through the Tourism Business Council. The entity presented the bill to the MIPTEC, which is the HODs of all the provinces, as the Director General. MINMEC, this is where the minister and all the MECs dealt with it, and then it was introduced to the cabinet. Just as we received 450 comments, which was been taken into consideration. Then, taken the bill to NETLAC, and the chairperson will then say that through the NETLAC process, it hasn't taken us 6 weeks to get through that process. So I think both labor and business has signed off on the draft bill. It has been certified by the state law advisor. And then the key discussion areas during the consultation process, just to highlight that. The DM has referred to that, the issue of information of tourism businesses, whether it should be voluntary and mandatory. At the end, the agreement by MINMEC was that it should be voluntary. That the intention is not to over-regulate tourism, not to create more emphasis of compliance in a South Africa that's already compliant. You've got compliance with DTI, SARS, and all of those issues. So it is a voluntary process, but there is a clause in there which also have a process for us to sort of acknowledge those who register. Then norms and standards, and that was a decision from MINMEC that they recommend that as only the minister issues norms and standards. The purpose of that we set a standard throughout South Africa, that we do not have a standard in one province and another standard in the other province. So the norms and standards should be a standard for South Africa, which should be compliant by all the provinces and by industry. Tourism Protector enforced powers for industry on tourist complaints. And I think what we need to know is that the National Communal Commission, the Equity Court, they've got certain responsibility to that act. Our act do not have that sort of overarching one, but we are more a mechanism to deal with tourism complaints into the different departments or institutions which complaints is related to. Composition of the Board of South African Tourism. One of the issues was that has been discussed, also extensively in the portfolio committee, geographic representation. The board consists out of a certain amount of officials, but this is a national entity, and the board's composition comes from knowledge, experience, qualifications, priority for the effective efficient management of the board. The board is a public entity to intend to serve the national interest. And the board size is already large. So I think one of the issues that has been addressed extensively through the Monday process was the geographic spread. Transformation has been discussed as a standalone objective in the Act. At the end, it was decided and determined through all the processes that the NTSS address transformation. The Civil BEE Act amendment from 2011 and the BEE Tourism Charter address the transformation. So you cannot duplicate those prescripts into this legislation. Of course, that will run by other legislation, which is applicable to all South Africans. Provision for tourist guides to drive motor vehicles with a carrying capacity of 10 people. The present Act has that provision into the regulations. That has been extensively debated, specifically in NetLac, and that clause has been removed from our legislation because that is managed in accordance with legislation administered by the Department of Transport. Then the grading system to consider cost of grading and the period of renewal. Some of this will come out of our regulations, but that was some of the key issues that have been under discussion. Then we've got the implementation plan, and I won't sort of deal with that. Just to say that Treasury has passed the bill and around the costing of it. Then implications of the Intergovernmental Relations Act, the Act will bond policy subject to Section 146 of the Constitution. The NTS clarifies the roles and responsibilities of all role players. So if one looks at the NTSS, which are the link from this bill, it defines what is the role of national, province and the sector, because that's a national, that is a tourism sector strategy, not a sort of government strategy only. Then one of the provisions, the minister must consult with MMEs when determining norms and standards. So I've highlighted earlier that MINAC has recommended that we should only, the power should only rest with the minister making regulations, setting norms and standards. But they should take normal consultation first, as we are a concurrent function. Registration and management of the affairs of tourist guide is at provincial level. So the national tourist guide, or the registrar, which are national, but the management of that tourist affairs will be vested on provincial level. The minister may delegate or assign certain powers to any organ of state. And so that in short is sort of given an overview. What I would then suggest is that Martin Donkey, who is the Chief Director of Legal Services, can do her presentation, which is in a summary format, that as she presents, then I think you can follow it also on the Act, because she did it by chapter, identifying the principles around that, and so then we will be in your hands if you need any additional information statement from the Act. But I think for process-wise, we've sort of developed our presentation on the basis that it talks to the draft of language.
Okay, we can continue with that, and I'm sure it will give us those issues that are really necessitating this bill, and so that we zoom and concentrate on today. Immediately after that, which means this will be the battle of the legal group. Then we'll get our own legal as well.
Thank you very much, Chair. As the COO has already said, this presentation will give an overview of what the content of the bill looks like. Chairperson, if we go to Chapter 1, which is entitled Interpretation on Objects. This is a chapter composed of three clauses, that is clause 1 to clause 3. This chapter seeks to define certain words and expressions like legislation will define what certain clauses or question means. It also sets out general objectives of the bill and determines how conflict with other laws are to be dealt with, like where there's a conflict with a provincial legislation, the bill specifically says how this conflict will be dealt with. Chapter 2 sets forth the National Tourism Sector Strategy, Norms and Standards, Codes of Good Practice. The chapter basically authorizes the minister, following a consultative process, to establish the NTSS to promote the objects of the Act. It sets out what the strategy must contain. It says it must at least provide for strategies, objectives, indicators, targets, plans, guidelines, procedures, and institutional arrangements relating to the promotion, development, and transformation of tourism. Initially, we had in the preamble a transformation which we kept, but because of the public consultation, as the CEO has said, we decided that transformation aspects are best dealt with in the strategy. And the NTSS currently does allude to transformation. And it's important to mention that once the Act is passed, the NTSS will no longer be a standalone document, but will be part of the legal framework. Chapter 2 also seeks to authorize the minister to gather information relating to tourism and to create a database of information on tourism businesses. This the minister can do by issuing out a notice calling upon businesses to provide information, and the minister is further given the power to gather information from any other source. I mean, the minister can go to provinces, can go to local government, can go to the register of companies, to SARS, where he can get information, he will be entitled to do this. The portfolio committee proposes that we shy away from the word may, which is in clause 5, and they propose that it be replaced by the term must, just to ensure that this is an obligation that the minister will perform. This chapter again provides for the minister to determine norms and standards and indicators to measure compliance with the norms and standards. These are norms and standards for practicing responsible tourism, achieving service excellence in the sector, promoting the object of the Act, and the provisioning of tourism information services to the public. This is where the function of the department in terms of coming up with norms and standards for the visitor information centers is located. The norms and standards will follow a consultative process with the MECs of provinces and the public as well. The bill also gives the minister the power to issue a code of good practice within the tourism sector to guide conduct relating to tourism services, facilities, and products. This can be found in clause 8 of the bill. Chapter 3, if you go to chapter 3, it deals with the continued existence of the South African Tourism Board. It's the board that is currently established in terms of the Tourism Act of 1993. This bill seeks to continue its existence. It specifies, clause 10 specifies the functions of the board, mainly to reaffirm its mandate to market South Africa, its products and facilities internationally and domestically. This clause has been retained from what is provided for in the current legislation. What is new is that the board is now authorized, with the approval of the minister, to establish a national conventions bureau to market the country as a business event destination. On the composition of the board, the bill provides that it will consist of at least 9 and not more than 13 members who will be appointed by the minister.
It's important also to state that the members will be appointed on the basis of their knowledge, experience, or qualification. And the Act further says that the composition of the board must broadly be representative of society with due regard to race, gender, and disability. Provisions further made in the bill regarding matters that are normally associated with the establishment of a statutory body, such as the term of office of the board, qualifications and membership, and how a member will vacate office. Makes further provision regarding how the board must conduct their meetings, their funding, financial accountability, and remuneration, which are largely based on the provisions of the Public Finance Management Act. The board can appoint a chief executive officer who is responsible for the efficient management of the business of and the affairs of the board. Most importantly, the board determines an employment and remuneration policy applicable to the personnel of the board and that of the chief executive officer. But it's important also to state that the Act makes provision that it must be with the approval of the minister, acting with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance. On the grading council, COO has already said the grading council is currently a business unit within SAT. Now, what the Act seeks to do is to authorize the minister to develop a national grading system for tourism. The grading system must promote excellence in the provision of tourism services, facilities, and products. It seeks to establish the Tourism Grading Council as a juristic person. It currently will have its own jurisdiction. The minister will, however, have oversight over the council. There's a clause in the bill that says the minister can assign or delegate the oversight of the board to the department, an organ of state, or to any other institution. The Act is also providing.
I still continue with the caucus there. We're coming to question. The presentation.
Thank you, Chair. The bill provides for the normal clauses that would deal with the establishment of the statutory body, how the council is, members of the council are appointed, whether or not they are remunerated, and how do they vacate office. There will be a chief quality assurance officer who is responsible for supervising the process of grading and for the strategic management of the grading system. The portfolio committee had a huge discussion about the processes just to ensure that there's conformity to standards. Then there was a proposal that was made to include the powers of the council to supervise processes relating to standards and also to beef up on the sub-complements of the grading council to assist the quality assurance officer in performing the functions that are allocated to her. She's currently here. All the powers are with her to appoint staff and make sure that standards that are set in the grading system are upheld. I have alluded to this one where the minister is empowered to assign oversight of the council. The purpose of the provision is to give the minister discretion which may be exercised as the consensus requires. A new legal dispensation is provided in the bill concerning the tourism protection. The background to this one is that we have realized that even though we have the National Consumer Commission, we still, as a department, receive complaints from tourists. and the complaints also that tourist complaints are not given the urgent attention that they require. A tourist is here for a day, two or three, they are out of the country, and then they never get to hear how their complaints have been resolved. So we sought to provide for an office within the department. The minister will then designate an official of the department as a tourism protector. We are not going to be employing somebody and saying you are a tourism protector, but an employee of the department will be designated by the minister by notice, and the bill provides for the functions of the tourism protector, which includes recommending to the minister the accreditation of a scheme or arrangement established by or for a particular tourism sector to resolve tourist complaints and to monitor the effectiveness of accredited schemes. This means, Chair, we are promoting self-regulation. The sector or different sub-sectors will have the liberty to come up with proposals presented to the minister with regard to how they will themselves be in a position to resolve complaints. And if the minister is satisfied that the schemes that they are proposing will be effective, the minister will accredit them, and then the tourism protector, when receiving complaints, will be able to refer complaints to those schemes. A tourist guide, this is a section, a chapter that has always been there in the current tourism legislation. And we just want to state that the Constitution provides that every citizen has the right to choose a trade. And in particular, this is what Chapter 6 is to regulate, that is the practice of the tourist guide profession. The National Register is appointed by the minister. And the responsibilities of the National Register are to maintain a central database of tourist guides, to prepare a code of conduct and ethics for tourist guides. Most importantly, to hear and determine appeals lodged with or against decisions that are taken by provincial registers of tourist guides. And also to liaise with role players in the tourist sector, with a view to facilitate growth in the sector, improving and maintaining standards in the tourist guide. And this is a clause that is given in the National Register, the power to talk to other government departments like Home Affairs relating to the role that tourist guides are playing in the country. The provincial registers still remain with the authority to appoint provincial registers. And Chair, this is where a lot of activity takes place in the provinces regarding tourist guides. Provincial registers are the ones responsible for registering tourist guides. In the national department, all that happens is that there's a central database where provincial registers will provide information concerning tourist guides, and then this information is in the database in the National Register's office. They deal with complaints when there's action to be taken against misconduct by a tourist guide. Provincial registers are responsible to exercise disciplinary powers over guides, and most critically, they are to disseminate information about registered tourist guides. The bill sets forth the procedure relating to the registration of tourist guides, and it requires tourist guides to show proof of competence determined by the South African Association of Tourism before registration can be effected. And the rest of the of Chapter 6 Chair deal with matters such as the code of conduct with which tourist guides must comply with, complaints against tourist guides, how they should be dealt with, basically giving provincial registers to determine whether
conduct by tourist guides is an offense or not, and what to do if it's an offense, whether it constitutes a misconduct, and what steps to be taken to ensure that unbecoming conduct is not is attended to. Chapter 7 is general clauses that you normally find in legislation. It identifies which methods are offenses, also provides for penalties relating to those offenses, provides the minister with the powers to come up with certain regulations, it repeals the current legislation, and put in place transitionary provisions and also saving provisions. This is the short title of the of the act. Chairperson, I think that is where my presentation will end. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I agree with the department. We have had quite a lengthy process in the National Assembly, in the Portfolio Committee on Tourism, and this is the now legal issue, but I think if anything, it's all the sort of policy issues if the committee decides, but there's nothing from a legal point of view that they know that is problematic to the committee.
And I don't mind sharing the policy issue.
No, Chairperson, I said if there are any. I mean, if the members want to, you know, interrogate the board, I mean, it's just, it's good. I mean, if there are any, I don't see any policy issues, but I'm not a politician, so for now, I'm talking.
So now that you're not a politician, you don't see any political issue. Okay. Honourable members, this is the time for social neutrality so that we are able to come with them. We know what to introduce.
Thank you, Jay. Jay, the first issue that I want to raise is it's got to do with our role at the NCOP, because as you would know, you know, we primarily represent the provincial interest. What I miss in the bill as a reflection on that is the issue about the involvement of local government. As you would know, that the majority of tourist activities transpire in local authorities to the extent that many Scott tourism offices and so on. And I don't see reflection on that interaction and what is the role of local government in this envisaged legislative framework. And if I could just add on that, I mean, there's also a cross distinction between the role of district municipalities and local municipalities in that. So that is the first issue. The second issue, Jay, is the one of, about the tourist guide registration. And it seems that there's a process that's proposed in terms of qualifications and the minimum standards of tourist guides. But the big issue is, you know, from a rural perspective, a number of these tourist guides have very specific knowledge, which is not necessary book knowledge. And I think it's necessary also to provide, and I suppose that will come maybe in the regulations that will guide the minimum standards. But it's important to understand that these guides don't always have book knowledge, but they've got practical knowledge about the specific environment and so how you deal with that. And then, the last issue, Chair, is the one about over-regulation. You know, it seems that there's a tendency in this government that we must regulate more. Our people, the people are tired, businesses are tired of over-regulation, so we must make it easier for people to do business. And I just got a feeling that it's another mechanism that will add to the red tape of the rest of the day doing this. So this is a big amount to check. Thank you.
Okay, special delegate from Gauteng. Assistant Cape? Gauteng. Yeah, Gauteng.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to get clarity because the bill has been through neglect for this. And for me, all social technology presented today. But it would be interesting to understand whether were there any sticking points when it went through the neglect process. Were the issues of disagreement there? Because yes, I have noted there is an implementation plan that is in place. But what would be important for me for now is the neglect process, so then an agreement there. Because that would then be able to guide us moving forward. Thank you.
This is the advice I want to give the department when they come and do the presentation. They usually do it. I don't know what happened today. When you read the NCOP, you must not quote what you did in the NCOP. Because it has got nothing to do with us. We approach things differently. So we'd end up concentrating on what you did with the NA rather than on what you want to present to us. So if you present to the NA, you must present something clean, and it must come to us as clean as that, and then it's for you to reconcile. Otherwise, it will delay the bill, because we'll see that the NA has done this, will counter and say something. It will go back to the NA and all that, but if you do it separately, then you could only contact someone. But then the other issue, on chapter 6, on the issue of tourist guides, I'm not sure, it's subject to advice, or disciplines and complaints, even the chapter 5 on the tourism protection, I'm thinking how they were going to say that. The same bracket, the tourism protector, a tourist protector. We have a public protector, and I'll think of another protector that we would want to have. I'm sure Mr. Falkanzi could support me. Disability protector. So we'll be having all these things. That chapter 5 is chapter 6. I think as the delegate from Gauteng, and these maybe some of the labor issues, because if there is an ill discipline by a guide to a tourist, you can't take these complaints and refer to some. This could be labor issues. You deal with them normally. So the issue of the tourism protection and tourism guide, as they have proposed also as an alternative, they use the consumer. Exactly. There is also substance. There is a criminal issue. Use also substance. I'm just asking that. The issue of chapter 3, the SAT board, the question is, are board members going to be full time? We have a situation right now in the notary, where the notary's board is not full-time, and they've got issues and functions of national importance. And the board cannot sit normally, because people are working somewhere, you've got to find a common day to get it to. They're busy somewhere where they're busy, where they're full-time. Now, did we look into this issue, whether when we establish the board, you'll get people that are really dedicated, because this is tourism now is the key issue in the country. But if you look at me, I'm a board member, and I'm a member of parliament, and there's a board meeting, and there's a committee meeting, I have to choose. So that's a clarification. Chapter 2, I just want to check if it's a lack of better words. You say the minister must gather information. gathering the information might mean something else to other people about tourism or tourists. It is that because of lack of database, what the minister can do about getting this information that you talked about. While on the grading system, Tim, you will agree with me, the prerequisite must be a UA. Or in whatever, I just want to check if that is really going to be part of that. UA is going to be the first prerequisite. Lastly, to say that this is a Schedule 4, there's not much that we can decide here. Just a briefing and engage. Because we're taking it to provinces, who then give us a mandate or not to do all this business. Only that we want to be armed when we go and brief them, because we'll be representing you also, because we'll be introducing the bill to them. Any other comments? Yeah, I can see the department. I know those eyes. When they look at me like that, you want to speak. Honorable Funding.
Thank you, Jesus. You know, my father-in-law used to say it's one privilege to look at somebody and know what that person is thinking. But it's very bad when you know you didn't look at that person because you know what they are thinking.
Chairperson, thank you. I just want to ask our state law advisor whether the SELGA component has been addressed in the bill, in the NA. And this bill that we have in front of us, is that the final B44B. That's as we got it from the NA. But there's a document on SELGA, and it addresses local government, basically, and the relationship between tourism and local government. Now it could be that what this bill is doing is working on a national level governing provinces, but thereafter it's probably provinces, if I understand it, that must sort out municipalities. The rogueness of tourism entities happen on local government level, and I agree with Honourable Sinclair that is a place for complaints or that gives us a bad name or whatever, because I see that members have complained about the quality of food that's not up to standard, and the prices of accommodation establishments that are too high and that sort of thing. Now, maybe the protector will sort that out, I don't know. And then when you've got an establishment that, for instance, graded point number one, it is a registered certified business with a local municipality, and you work with a squatter person in the industry who's got a guest house and who doesn't pay all those registration fees as what the good bloke is doing. What we're doing here, I think, is regulating the good people. And I just need some guidance on that. Can we then sort out the baddies in the industry? Whether it's a bad tourist guide, whether it's a rogue adventure person or a rogue accommodation establishment. I just need some guidance on that, please.
Thank you. Just to say, I wanted to ask before I give to you, Deputy Minister, Mr. did mention that on the consultation process, did mention municipality. On the question that was raised, you know, page 18. So that was raised by Honourable Minister.
Thank you. I'll allow
the team
Thank you, Chair. And some of this I will refer to my colleagues. Just on the issue about local government, one needs to go back to what the Constitution says. It talks about local tourism as a schedule, and that schedule then refers to what is local tourism's referral or link to the provincial. So local government and local tourism as per the constitution and as defined in the funding is coming from the provincial budget. So we cannot legislate on a local level, as this is, in accordance with the constitution, a provincial mandate. But what we do here is that we've recognized that link and make sure that when we set norms and standards, when we deal with it, we go through provincial structures about that. At the same time, I want to sort of address the issue about SALGA, because SALGA is part of the MINMEC and the MIPMEC process, and it's part of the Intergovernmental Relations sort of Act. So therefore, they link into the tourism if they are a permanent member of the MINMEC and MIPMEC process. So when these things go through the MECs, and that this is where SALGA's involvement comes. Then the tourist guide matters, I will ask Victor to deal with that. Then on NEDLAC, honorable member, I think what is important that we make the report from NEDLAC available to the committee. It was part of the original documents that we have submitted. We've got copies here, so I think we can just make sure that we give it to the secretariat, because that addressed basically clause by clause what we've discussed. I must say that I think the major issue at NEDLAC was the issue about our original proposal to legislate the capacity around tourist guides and the vehicles. And that's the one that we've realized that's not our mandate in this legislation. So, and then one of the specifics when we were talking about the minister's role of assigning responsibilities, the business was clear that we should make sure that it's in compliance with the PFMA, which is an indicated intention of the legislation that it should be PFMA compliance. But we've written that specific clause, and that's our two of the major issues in the NEDLAC process. As I've indicated, the tourist guide, honorable chair, I think that the tourism protector, you're right, and I mean, I'm not going to debate the issue whether it should be a protector or not. That was something that we've looked in, and I think we will leave that to the members of parliament to deal with. On the South African Tourism Board, our experience, even with the present act and the board, is that the members who've been appointed on the tourism board are very committed. There's four meetings a year. If we look at our annual reports, you will find perhaps one member who haven't attended all four. What is also interesting is that in the past 8 years, the members voluntarily are on the board without any compensation in accordance with the treasury. They forfeited that because some of them are from business. So they do not expect to be paid as board members because they realize that they need to add value to this process. And I think that is why experience and knowledge in certain areas is essential. Even when we deal with the council, the composition there is to deal with all requirements that you expect, specifically when the chairperson was talking to the disability protector, because there's people that need to be there, because they are the people who knows what is it not to have access. Coming here, I see cars parked on the pavements. If a person is in a wheelchair, how do you pass? But I think that's the small things we need to sort of deal with. So, Honourable Chair, just to say that I think as far as the board is concerned, I must say it's a very committed board. And then on the grading, I think or Tulani or Tembi can deal with that issue. Registration of business, Victor, if you can deal with that one. And then Matodonki, if you can just indicate our interaction with municipalities, but I think that was also part of Victor's domain, being responsible for intergovernmental relations dealing with municipalities, then they can respond to those ones. Thank you. Perhaps Matodonki, we can start with you. You want to deal with municipalities, then we can go to the SAT around the grading, and then leave Victor with all the tourist guide and the business registration. Thank you.
Thank you for your. Municipalities had invited us even before we could go to cabinet in terms of the proposal, as in when we were drafting the process of review. And we started with the process of reviewing the current legislation. That has been extensively consulted. But even before the first draft was published for comment, we had gone to municipalities to present. And the bonus is that it was consulted, the draft was consulted at the time when we were consulting on the NTSS, which really was very helpful in terms of establishing the links between the NTSS and the proposal on the legislation. Chair, I agree, for lack of a better word, I used to gather information. But in terms of what the bill provides, it says the minister is to establish and maintain a database of information on tourism businesses. Specifically says the minister is to collect information for purposes of a database. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. To your question of whether UA is now a prerequisite for grading, first of all, the Grading Council introduced UA grading criteria as part of our quality grading as an additional service, not necessarily because it was an enforcement. The difficulty, though, Mr. Chair, comes with the building regulations. UA in the building regulations is not as enthusiastically enforced as we would like it to be from a tourism perspective. You find building plans being passed of a particular B&B or hotel, and when we come in, it is after the fact. So perhaps I could encourage or request the chair to assist on the other side with other colleagues from the building regulations perspective. But from our side, we definitely do conduct UA grading as part of the quality service.
Before you leave, I'm sure Tulan would also want to say something.
Thank you, Chair. Insofar as the point on the UA is concerned, I think we have adequately covered it. It will be on other matters that could be raised, Chair. We'll speak up.
And we're satisfied with the explanation of the board. Honourable Adams, you can comment.
Yeah.
No, Chairperson, that's only UA.
Mm-hmm.
If I, in a memory service,
don't find me.
We had the people of the Grading Council in front of us. Now, we've spoke at length about the UA, about the building regulations, and all that. And if I believe they, my memory serves me correct, they said that they will do everything in their power to talk, I think it's told on the public works or the IDT, the building regulations. Of course, we even spoke about the green regulations that need to come into the building regulations. And universal access is one of those things that we've hammered the Grading Council with, where we said that we need to look at it. I mean, I'm surprised to say that UA, you can only do so much and so much. It is something that needs to be pushed. Now, I think, I'm not a legal guru, not protecting him, but she said the very same thing, that they can do that, but it's the buildings that are already there. And I think for us, we need to invite public works on that and say, these are the things that other structures are raising when you put up structures, more especially tourism, that present. But tell me, you'll hear from Vita that things are going to be better in South Africa and what we're going to talk about you. Vita?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairman. Honourable members and your guests. Honourable guests,
and colleagues. I will start with the UA. With regard to the policy framework, it's work that we have to do together, collectively as government. And why am I putting it this way? Is that, take for instance, if we're talking about government buildings, they are under the custodianship of the Department of Public Works. But the main custodian of the policy on UA in the country will then be the Department of Youth, Women, and People with Disabilities. Now, ours is to champion the implementation of UA within the tourism sector. With regards to the framework that TEMI is implementing currently, it has made adequate provisions for that. With regards to programs that are run by the department, plans that we also presented here 2 days ago, a day ago, we are firmly entrenching specific programs that are going to be rolling out the UA aspect. So there is a limitation. It's almost similar to the issues that the CEO was raising, that when it comes to regulating a vehicle that is going to be carrying tourists and with the guidance on, we did realize that it is not a direct mandate for us, but it is an area we've got to work very closely with the Department of Transport. Similarly, in the committee that we have, where myself and Kelly also serve, and we have got a number of representative groups of communities with disability, we actually have the presence of the Department of Women, Youth and People with Disability. So we are doing everything that we can from our side, but we work with the department that is the custodian of the policy to make sure that it's fully integrated. Honorable Chairperson, in terms of the local government, I would like to also talk a little bit about that. The question that I had Honorable Sinclair raising was whether the bill intended at some point to make provisions, the regulations, to make provisions for certain responsibilities for local government. We did a thorough policy, what should I call it, review of the possible implications that could arise in terms of legislating this or that. We didn't see a gap, a legislative gap, at local government level with regards to tourism. The issue is how do we strengthen implementation, because it will still be issues that pertain to whether there is sufficient water that goes to that establishment, whether there is the sufficient management capacity at that information center, whether there is sufficient databases that have information of businesses that are active within that particular area and so on. So we then consciously did not impose any additional legislative requirements. Part of what we saw was that the minute we put legislative requirements on a particular sphere of government, they will be expected to comply with those requirements immediately after it has kicked in. These are going to become audit matters at a later stage. Do they actually assist us in the implementation? Not necessarily. So instead of going that route, that's why we've got particular programs such as capacity building at local government level, and we are conducting these trainings and so on. And that was the approach with regards to the local sphere. So we build the capacity at local sphere so that they can be able to implement the mandate of tourism at that level. But again, obviously, all the issues said to, with regard to the constitutional imperative from the CEO. With regard to, Honorable Chairman, with regard to the training of tourist guides, yes, there are areas where most people who come from a specific area would know more about that particular area, its history, its heritage, its culture, and so on, than people that come from elsewhere who probably would have learned it from studying it and so on.
However, the emphasis on everybody being trained and having gone through the system properly, amongst other things, include the fact that there are specific conduct issues for a guide. So if a particular person has not been trained in what the code of conduct is, if that person has not been trained in how to deliver this message, if this person has not been trained on how to actually present the entire country's brand for to the clients and so on, we end up having mixed messages. So that is why, as we presented even day before yesterday, we highlighted the fact that where there is potential, we will go there. And we will make sure that we bring these people into the training fold so that they are able to understand how these things are supposed to be done. We know specific hotspots where there are people who know the areas. We made examples when we heard previously. There was an example of Northern Cape. There was an example of Limpopo. These areas are areas that we would then be able to target and be able to say, let's bring these people to the fold. Otherwise, we would have problems with people not understanding the code of conduct. But the other most important thing is language. The people that are coming here, some would be speaking German, some would be speaking Russian, some would be speaking Italian, and so on. So that training also is important so that these people actually understand. There are two types of training. There's a training that does recognize that the person's cognitive capacity and learning capacity may not necessarily be as advanced because they haven't actually gone to certain levels of schooling. And that training then is able to provide for people at that particular level. But it's also a training that is provided to people that are already at an advanced level. So those methods are affected in the practice. In as far as the current regime is concerned, the legislative requirements, it also provides that we are able to do that. The protector issues, it's important to note, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, that this function is not, it's not a protector in the context of the consumer protector. This is a facilitator. Like the presenter said, if we have people that have come in for a 2 or 3 day stay and they have got issues they wanted to raise, it would be difficult for someone to have some dedication towards it and then follow through when people are actually by then in London or in the US or in Abuja. It would then need someone to be able to follow through with that. This person actually deals with those kind of issues. So we do not in any way conflict with the mandate of the consumer protection and so on, but we are able to then say, here are the issues that have come through from the people that have actually given us these issues, and then have a mechanism of being able to follow through with the process, the consumer protector, with regard to those specific issues. I thought that's just for the purpose of clarification. I think with regard to the board, the current practice is very good. But because this is a legislation in the future and so on, and it may be different people, part of what, from a policy perspective, part of what we see with regards to directorships in boards, you have a diverse mix of skills and competencies and so on. Now, if you look at what is happening, particularly with most professional institutes, they are going for what they call a continuous professional development. Now, continuous professional development would have happen only in instances where that particular person is active in the area of practice. So if you've got someone that you got on board because you wanted this person because they've got legal skills, for instance, it would be good to have a person who's active in the legal fraternity, who's dealing with these matters on a daily basis and understanding them. Similarly, if you want someone with financial skills, it would be good to have a person who's active, either as a financial something within another group and so on. And all these people, as they come together, then they bring the collective capability of that particular board. So that's part of the reasons why there would be, even in boards for bigger corporates, you would have all these independent board members that would come just to provide that skill from time to time. It helps to not have a direct management of these people on the executive management on a daily basis, closer to the operation, so that the lines don't just end up bled. But overall, there is a need for frequent engagement between the board and management to understand exactly what is happening. But it also depends on the nature of the business. Thank you, Ramachandran.
Thank you. Is there any issue or item outstanding from the members, special delegates, or Valian?
Chairperson, I would just like to ask, is the Persista now going to take some functions of the grading council over? Or is the Persista going to pass the grading issues onto the grading council? Thank you.
Let me check another hand. While they're still thinking about that question, Adam. No. Under the protection clause 45, the tourism protector, and that, I think the CEO has made mention of the self-regulating under that. But I'm looking for the enabling clause of the minister to do that. Because if a person is not happy with the ruling protector, like, for argument's sake, if you've got, you take your consumer tribunal of commission or the competitions commission, there is a tribunal, and also part of the tribunal is where the minister can also overturn, or there's a section in the act that the minister can also enable some decision or disable some decision that the tourism protector makes. I don't see an enabling clause as such here. Or maybe the CEO can enlighten us more.
Yeah, or found guilty, you have no recourse. If they have done something wrong,
excuse me, Chair, on numerous occasions we had a debate about the way that South Africa promotes tourism, specifically overseas, and we had this sort of enclaved approach where towns or cities or provinces, you know, promote them in a more aggressive fashion than, for instance, South Africa. So is the intention also to address that through this legislation, where we have rather a brand South Africa than, for instance, a Northern Cape brand or so on, because we had the debate and it certainly creates a bit of confusion. You know, there's always this tug of war between Durban and Cape Town, Kimberley and this and that and the other.
You know, one municipality marketing itself in London and the province at the same time, and SAT is there. Who's marketing South Africa? I think it's along those lines that we have a problem. I don't know whether I told you this example, but when the president went into one country, immediately he was greeted and united. Then the president, the prime minister of that country said, yeah, we had your mayor here last week. We had a very good time with it. So the president is going to a country where a mayor comes from there and he doesn't know. So the country doesn't know. It's not coordinated.
Thank you, Honorable King. Perhaps just to respond as the first contestant, this is a vehicle for us to deal with complaints coming into the government system. A complaint might go directly to the grading council, who will deal with the issue. But if a complaint comes to the department, and one of our intentions is to have civil legal agreements with industry, with whoever, so within timelines you need to deal with the issue, so that we really sort of make sure that there's service delivery. So I think that is the principle. Honorable you can see and the old hands are catching up out sometimes. I think that the intention of the protector was to have, because we said up front that we want not to over-regulate, and I think that Honorable Sinclair has sort of referred to this, because there's a lot of other legislation that applies. I think that is perhaps one of the omissions that we might need, and I think that is something for the committee to deal with, to see whether an enabling clause can then be working to either the, so that at least there's a link, because ultimately the legislation will deal with your mandate of what the minister or the MECs can do. So I think it's something that, thank you very much, but I think that's for the committee to deal with. Then just on the promotion and marketing, and I'll ask Tulani to give detail. I think the first principle is that this legislation is enabling. In the purpose of the establishment of the Tourism Board is to market South Africa domestically and internationally. And the Honourable Chair is correct that what was happening in South Africa is that everybody started marketing themselves outside. Now, Durco has already embarked on the process with all HODs of the provincial departments of the DGs, of the previous offices, where they are dealing with the issue of provinces, municipalities, district municipalities, just go to foreign countries, enter into agreements which commit government. So there's a process that's been run by Durco, because they are the custodian in relation to international relations and how we deal with international. And I think Tulani can just enlighten that, although that you won't find in the bill, is the process that's really taking place. The good cooperation there is between provincial entities marketing the provinces, the national entity being South African Tourism, responsible for marketing South Africa, and how these matters have been dealt with. And also to make sure that there's a more focused approach where when we market externally, we market South Africa, while when we get to the provinces, they market sometimes products. And I think it's just a matter that Tulani can deal with that detail. Although this is a process, this is empowering or enabling legislation, ultimately the how part will come either in regulations or how we deal with that issue, so we're setting norms and standards. Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Although obviously not included in the current bill, let me give you some comfort in terms of where we are and the kind of achievements we have had until now. We have realized that, first of all, there has always been a question of the risk of a duplication of activities when we market South Africa abroad. It started with the alignment of the logo. Brand South Africa has led that charge. All of us have a common identity when we are marketing abroad. The second thing was the payoff line, inspiring new ways, which went through cabinet and there was approval of that, and therefore also cars that are using
the South African logo and marketing the country as a investment and historic destination are aligned in that respect. We then got together with the provincial tourism authorities and the cities under my chairmanship to streamline roles and responsibilities when we are marketing abroad, to avoid exactly the kind of situation that you alluded to, where all of us could at some stage be involved in using a marketing media like television or print media abroad, which could possibly have conflicting messages for that matter. Just to give you an example, there's always a risk sometimes when you are all marketing abroad that if you are marketing a province, you may be tempted to indicate that your province is crime-free or is malaria-free. And by implication, it means there are other provinces or cities in South Africa that have a problem of that nature. So we have tackled this and discouraged such kind of marketing approaches which could be detrimental to our brand, South Africa. We then understood that South African tourism will lead the charge when it comes to international marketing. The provinces who are indeed carrying the product can bring their product to exhibitions. We use platforms internationally like the ITB and WTM in Berlin and London respectively, and a host of other platforms that we use. All of us exhibit under one banner, and it is the South African tourism stand. And so there is complete alignment there. We defined the role of SA Tourism as the lead on the international space, and that the provinces and the cities will take a very active role in marketing the provinces and the cities locally. And we just discussed at last week's MINMEC exactly how they do it and what sort of logos they will have, and whether they can still use the provincial payoff lines, such as, for instance, the Zulu Kingdom inspired in different ways, whatever they use locally, but it's confined to the local environment. So there is alignment, and we have all agreed that when it comes to the international space and the use of media with global footprint that communicates marketing messages about destination South Africa will be the domain of South African tourism, that we cannot possibly have a situation where on CNN or National Geographic there is a South African tourism advert and it's followed by an advert from the Western Cape or another one from the KwaZulu-Natal and Northern Cape and so on and so on, because that is it is actually counterproductive to the image of the country. The other part which became very important is making sure that we expand our footprint. There are markets where we do not have offices at South African Tourism, but we have missions abroad. So there is alignment in, firstly, making sure that there is something called Team South Africa out there. Team South Africa is led by the embassy in every country where we are. It will have under it the South African Tourism and more likely South African Airways and Brand South Africa and DTI if they are present in that country, so that we have alignment of purpose as well as sharing of the limited resources that we all have. We can support events of national importance in South Africa and pose a common face together, and that's what that has worked very successfully, while at the same time maintaining our own autonomies when it comes to reporting lines and budgets and all of that kind of thing. South African tourism also engages with missions to expand on the economic diplomacy. What happens is for every ambassador designate and diplomat that is going abroad, they will always stop by at South African tourism and get some kind of induction on how to market the country from a tourism point of view. So we also spend this time with the ambassador designates in our offices. They go through there the whole day, and this has been working very religiously without exception. Secondly, we have developed training manuals and workshops around the world where we continue to reinforce the message of marketing tourism together with the department in their international branch setup. We produce material and collateral to support the missions abroad where we are offline in different languages, but all of that coming from a common source, which is South African tourism. So there's commonality there, there's alignment insofar as that is concerned. We also host a representative from missions during Indaba. The last Indaba, I think we hosted somewhere in the region of 37 different missions. The decision to send people there is really up to the Director General in Durban. But we sponsor from funding them and accommodation so that they continue to be exposed to the impact of tourism via a platform like Indaba. That has just happened as well. The last part that I would like to touch on is also from a presidency point of view. There are initiatives that have started last year already where there's some sort of a tripartite arrangement now under the chairmanship of the minister in the presidency, Minister Shabani, where South African Tourism, Brand South Africa, and Travelling South Africa currently meet to find synergies, to find, to eliminate duplication, and make sure that, in fact, we can continue to augment each other's messaging. And it is also about us being aligned when it comes to communicating messages, responding to various incidents. As an example, when we have issues like Marikane and the Oscar Pistorius issue, the dragging of the Mozambican citizen to death, most of us get asked this question regularly. But we find that if there is no alignment between what Cabinet has communicated and what Brand South Africa is communicating, we run the risk of communicating conflicting messages, and the embassies as well have those kind of issues. So we are working on strategies that will help us, even looking at a communication strategy that really makes sure that as South Africa and agencies that are engaged in communication, international platform, we actually have a common faith, we have a common understanding of the messages, and there's context to it. This will now, this communication under the presidency involves our ministers. They've written letters to indicate that this process is becoming important, and it will bring on board GCIS and other entities in that regard. So that's the progress that has been made so far, and I think we have found significant value in this, and there is serious alignment. We have nothing to worry about at this point.
Thanks very much. On that, just to add lastly that you know, these members, think as inside, have talked about economic diplomacy. They come from that workshop. So they can assist you also if you want to send other people if they show the international. Just ask for one member to go there. They will help you.
Maybe it's taking license in terms of what you said now. I want to go back to the issue of participating at the jazz festival. That we actually use this platform as a further opportunity to expose members in terms of the work that we do. When we invite you to this event, we do not see it as an entertainment. You consider yourself on duty. So that at least you come back here and give proper feedback.
We are run up a day on time. But on that issue, one request from SAP. I even informed Jamie about this issue. I know it is not within your reach and power. If you could get these invites a little bit early, so that when we send them and we communicate with members, then they are available. But then if you get them late, it's very difficult. as you know, we come from different provinces, and here in the West, it's very difficult. But that's just the way of moving forward on this issue. But we are representatives when we're there. We really want to. Honourable members, we have reached our time. I want to request you and persuade you to discuss any other thing offline. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. If you say one thing and there are 9 people, then and they all want to say one thing. So we have 9. Is it possible that you can discuss offline? you insist, the building is going to fall if you don't say this thing.
Yes, just a matter of clarity, when you build the provinces, expectations from the department side. So if you can get clarity, if you need support from the outside, that we know. We've got the dates, so that if I think just clarity, then we will deal with that with the office.
100% we need support. You must have noticed that ever since that young lady arrived, better. Things are working far better. Yeah.
So, are you afraid for the lady? If you don't give her a chance to say something?
No. This is the difference. No, this one is clarity about our briefing to provinces.
Yeah.
I want to find out about our wife. She did say it as a compliment, and I don't want her to give other people a compliment without giving me. So, now you'll speak, but on this issue, Mr. Foskazi. Petra will discuss with Kupeda. We definitely need support. All the officials with all the provinces. Victor is going to split himself and everybody. and that is why I say everybody. Okay. On Farlingen, now that they've given me, I can keep.
Chairperson, thank you. I wanted to thank the department for a very well presented matter, and if some other of the cabinet or departments could learn from you how to really present a bill, things would be so much easier in Parliament. You've thought about this, it's very well presented. Thank you.
Thank you. We did very well on time. Thanks everybody for coming. The meeting is adjourned.